Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Kurt Anderson in for Brian Lehrer today, and joining me now from Shanghai is Marketplace China correspondent Rob Schmitz, who is just back from visiting Foxconn's biggest factory in the big, prospering industrial city of Shenzhen, where he became, I'm told, only the second journalist ever to see an Apple production line there. Rob Schmitz, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
So you were at the Luanghua Foxconn facility in Shenzhen, which is Foxconn's biggest factory, with the amazing, I never get over it, number of 240,000 workers. Well, what kind of access did you have? What did you see?
Well, today and yesterday, I spent 2 days touring the entire factory. And I was able to see an iPad production line today. I saw the dormitories. I saw the mess halls. I saw centers. You name it. It's a very large place. It's about the size of by U.S. city, and that's sort of what it looks like. There's malls. There's banks. There's libraries. It's a big place.
And it sounds like an amazing place. And given that I've never talked at length to anyone who's visited there, and certainly no one who has visited as extensively as you did, first of all, why did they let you in? You're the second. Why did they decide to open it up to you?
That's a good question. I got the call from Apple after my piece on This American Life aired regarding Mike Daisy, and as them, I would imagine they probably thought, well, you know, this all the Mike Daisy. They I don't know what their thinking was, but they invited me, so I said yes. I said, why not?
Okay, Rob, thanks very much. Your call is breaking up slightly. We've lost a little bit of it, but we're going to try to fix that. And we have a listener call in the meantime. Craig from Brooklyn, what do you have? I guess we don't have Craig from Brooklyn either, but perhaps... We have Bob from Mountainside, New Jersey, calling in. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for taking my call. I've been reading on the internet that some of this questions about the working conditions at the Apple facilities are causing a backlash amongst the workers. In other words, they depend upon this income from these excessive hours that, you know, our Western culture is demanding, that they're, you know, conforming to our lifestyle, even though we did exactly the same thing in our country at our at that stage of development in our economy. And why should we, you know, have to be able to dictate working conditions in other countries when they're, you know, at a very early stage of development?
No, it's a good point, and I'll talk when we get Rob Schmitz back on the line in Shanghai, whom we have now. We will talk to him about that. Thanks very much, Bob. Rob, this caller mentions a decent point, which is to say, while it is all well and good for us to wish that the factories in China making products we buy and use here in the United States have decent conditions, the United States are at a different standard, frankly, than 2012 conditions in China. And should we recognize that? And what degree of difference ought we to allow?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think that's a question that we probably should ask ourselves. I mean, I don't have an answer for that. I think that, you know, China, I think you have to sort of look at it in this way. You know, China is a developing country. It's nowhere near how developed our country is. And when I've talked to workers about this, they've had a very similar opinion. You know, I've actually talked to workers and asked them, you know, a lot of Americans are very worried about you and about your conditions at your workplace. And I gave them examples. And I remember one married couple were sort of looking at me puzzled by all of this. And the man finally said, how could they be worried about us? How would they even understand, you know, what it's like here? He said, I don't even understand what it's like in the United States. All I know is it's very rich and we're very poor here. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting answer to that. And they both were very puzzled by this. You know, this was after an interview where they said, you know, the factory conditions are, in our opinion, they're better than the last factories we were at. And, you know, we think it's okay. And I don't think that they were happy being factory workers or happy with the work they were doing necessarily. It is a factory after all. But I think generally when you talk to folks and you ask them these questions about, you know, what do you think of work at the factory, the conditions at the factory, many of them, the only, you know, reference point they have is other factories they might have worked at. And so for many people, you know, in Shenzhen, you know, Foxconn is sort of at or near the top of the list as far as places that factory workers would like to work at. And so they see it in a very favorable light in that when you ask them that question.
And when you talked to these workers just in the last couple of days, were they aware that Foxconn had just announced, apparently in response to sort of pressure from the United States, that conditions were going to get even better, that they were going to start adhering more and more to the get closer within a year to the national Chinese law of 49 hours a week and yet get the same pay? Did they realize that good liberals in America were about to apparently enhance their working conditions?
No, most of them have no idea that
Darn.
This is happening. What was interesting, though, is today I went to a orientation meeting for brand new workers, the first day on the job, and the orientation leader, she gave them a PowerPoint presentation of, you know, what it's like to work at Foxconn, the hours they would be expected to work, and it was interesting on the hours. It said, you know, you cannot work more than 60 hours. And that was actually the old rule. The new rule that Foxconn has agreed to is that by July of 2013, they'll agree to have workers work only 49 hours. That will be the limit. And so I think it was interesting watching the orientation leader say that, and then she stopped, and then she actually told them, wait, this isn't right. It's actually 49 now. So that was the first thing. And it was interesting watching their reaction to that, because I was watching the workers and a lot of them were actually frowning about this. They weren't that happy that because they came here, they came to this factory to work overtime. That's sort of the, many of them, that's the reason that they came from their villages. And so they were sort of a little grumbling about that. It's an interesting phenomenon.
You are describing almost, if that is widespread, that feeling of, oh, what, we can't work 60 or 70 or 80 hours a week? Oh, darn. It sounds like some Evelyn Waugh comedy for the modern age, practically.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the Fair Labor Association, when they did these surveys, you know, what wasn't covered as much in the press was that, you know, I think when they did the survey, I think 48% of the respondents said that they were satisfied with the overtime that they were currently working. Another 34% said they actually wanted to work more overtime, and that left only 18% that said that they wanted, you know, fewer hours. But when they also asked them if they they asked them how happy they were after a certain period of time of working, the happiness quotient started to dip after 52 hours. So you have this sort of conflicting thing here going on. You've got, you know, workers who say, you know, we want to make a lot of money and we need to put in the overtime to do that. But when you talk to them after a long shift, many of them say, oh, you know, I'm not too happy about this.
Right.
It's an interesting dichotomy. And I think that gets to the complexity of this whole issue a little.
Right. And so 52 hours is perhaps the dividing line between where they feel beleaguered. So the conditions and whether they work long hours and at what point they don't want to work more hours is one set of issues that we're talking about, that
right.
The Fair Labor Association talks about. The entirely other set of issues, which are obviously much rarer, are dangerous conditions like the aluminum dust explosion that killed workers at a different Foxconn plant, and the allegations or existence of certain kinds of industrial toxins and all that. Are those issues being dealt with effectively by Foxconn as well?
Well, that's hard to say. And Foxconn defended themselves when I asked them about this. I think it was in a survey that 43% of people at Foxconn claimed they had seen an accident at Foxconn, and when you look at the face of it, that's pretty shocking. You think that they need to really improve their safety standards if that's the case. Now, when I asked Foxconn about this, they said that the way that question was phrased in Chinese, actually, it was very vague, and they said that many people, when they looked at their responses in Chinese, they saw that it was Foxconn's allegation that some of the workers said, I saw a car accident outside the factory, and they claimed that was an accident. But I'm not really sure. I haven't checked with the Fair Labor Association to see how it was phrased in China, so I can't really make that assessment of whether what Foxconn is telling me is true or not. But, on the face of it, 43% is very high. The workers that I spoke with, for the most part, said that they didn't think that they were working at a very dangerous place. They didn't consider Foxconn to be dangerous. However, I did speak with a couple of workers, one woman in particular who was pregnant, who was worried about working in, she worked in the clean room of the iPad assembly line, and she was worried about the fumes from the alcohol that she used to clean the screens of the iPad at the end. And so she told me that for her unborn baby, she was very worried about that. She's very upset about that. And the problem here was that her supervisor, she said, refused to switch her job to another part of the assembly line. And so that obviously is a big issue. And I think that when you talk to workers, one of the biggest issues that they have are their immediate supervisors, the way that they're managed. And that's something that I got across the board when I talked to workers.
You've reported that in Shenzhen, which is this enormous, prospering, the first special economic zone city, that the cost of living has gotten so high with all these workers coming from around the country, coming to places like Foxconn to work long hours, that people, there's a reverse emigration beginning a bit. What are the living conditions like? And if you're a Foxconn worker making my iPad, how do you live?
Well, if you're a Foxconn worker and you don't live on campus at the factory dorms, which are eight bunk beds to a dorm usually, you live right outside the factory in a lot of these kind of apartment complexes that are outside the factory gates. And these apartment complexes are very similar to the dorm rooms, actually, except they're a little smaller, and there's maybe four or five people to a room. You have one bathroom, you have one kitchen. It's sort of like a larger studio apartment. And what's interesting, what I found out is that, Foxconn promised a raise to its workers back in January. And I learned after a couple of visits to Shenzhen that many workers actually didn't get this raise. But the landlords caught wind of it very quickly because they read it in the newspapers. And every person I talked to said, who lived outside the gate, said that their landlords had already raised the rent. So, many of them had a double whammy of not getting a raise that they thought they were going to get, and then their landlords, jacking up the rent for them.
That's an efficient market.
Yeah, never underestimate landlords in China. Yeah.
Could there be? I'm just speculating about a scenario. If working the conditions improve and costs improve, pay improves at Foxconn, and as a leader in the Chinese economy, that spreads through the Chinese economy. Doesn't, in addition to making up, sort of salving our guilt for owning Apple products, doesn't it also slowly decrease the gap between Chinese labor costs and U.S. labor costs, and then eventually help manufacturing return to the United States?
I don't know if that's, if it will do that, actually. You know, I think a lot of economists think that what it will eventually do is it will cause, and you're already seeing this happening in China. Foxconn, for example, has opened new factories inland, you know, in interior provinces where the wages are much lower. And you're seeing a lot of companies do that. They're moving from the coast of China and from places like Shenzhen, which have developed already, to the more the less developed areas of China. They're moving to lower cost countries like Bangladesh and Vietnam. You know, and so I don't know if those jobs will be going back to the U.S. You know, I was talking to Foxconn's representative today, and they were talking about how they were going to start automating that factory more. And they were showing me some of the machinery that they had that was replacing a lot of workers. So, you know, you've got that as well, because, you know, that factory has always been very heavy on manual labor. But, you know, now they've got a lot of machines that can do that job. And I think you're going to start seeing that on the coast, but you're also going to start seeing a lot more factories in the inland provinces of China. They're moving inland.
So the market and the globalized market, where you simply go where you have to, whether it's to robots or cheaper labor workers in other countries, is going to apply to China just the way it does to the United States. The CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, visited a different Foxconn factory last week, and he announced these new agreements and understandings with Foxconn's about better working conditions. Steve Jobs evidently never visited the factories. Do we assume that Steve Jobs just, you know, didn't care so much, and Tim Cook does, or has the various discussions and activist movement in the United States of the last year sort of prevailed upon Apple to say, okay, we'll try to make things better in China?
I think what happened here is that I think it's more about Tim Cook. I think, you know, Tim is a supply chain guy. He really understands the supply chain. That's sort of where he came from. He also, I think, understands China probably a lot better than Steve Jobs did. And he thinks about it a lot more. And, you know, him coming here and meeting with leadership in Beijing and also going to Foxconn's factory in the inland province of Henan, you know, these were symbolic gestures for him. And he definitely knows the public value of that in China. That's a big deal for many Chinese, for them to see that he's meeting with leaders and meeting with factory workers. And, you know, at the time when, of course, the Fair Labor Association report came out, it was definitely a good move, I think, on his part.
There are, as I read, 150-odd other manufacturers, companies creating products for Apple in China. If Foxconn is the sort of leading one, does that presume that these other vendors will sort of rise in the conditions they provide to workers to follow in Foxconn's footsteps?
Yeah, I think it does. And I spoke with Louis Wu, who's a special assistant to the CEO of Foxconn, Terry Go, today. And Louis was telling me that, you know, his belief that because Foxconn's the biggest employer in China, it makes about 40% the world in electronics. It really is a force.
Wow.
In the electronics manufacturing world. And so whatever they do is going to set the agenda for every electronics manufacturer in China and anywhere else, because everyone's looking at what they're doing. So I think that a lot of these changes, if they're implemented the way that the Fair Labor Association has recommended, will definitely start to change how manufacturing is done and working conditions in China.
Before I let you go, Rob, bottom line, I know that many listeners are thinking, so should I be guilty about my iPhone and my iPad, or should I not? From the horse's mouth of a guy who just saw them being made, what's your feeling?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. I think it depends on who you are. And I think, you know, it's difficult. I don't really know what to feel. I'm talking to you on my iPhone right now, and I'm not really
sure. I guess you don't feel very guilty.
I don't don't feel that guilty, right? I mean, it's and you know, talking to workers, I don't know if it's a thing that, you know, I don't know if we should feel that guilty about it. These workers have made the decision to move to these factory towns from their villages. They weren't forced to do this. They're trying to make a better life for their families. You know, this is a good opportunity for many of them at a time when this country is developing very rapidly. So it's all part of this economic rise of China. And I think that for the most part, at least from the workers that I've spoken to, I think that in some ways, you know, they're very satisfied that they've been doing this work and that they've been able to earn money to send back home and to improve their homes back in their home village. And I don't know if that's something that I feel guilty about.
Rob Schmitz, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kurt.
That is Rob Schmitz, Marketplace's China correspondent. Up next, the science of how evangelicals experience their relationship with God. I'm Kurt Anderson, in today for Brian Lehrer. Stay with us.